If you've had a close friendship in your life, or even now, you've probably experienced some joy. You've experienced togetherness. You've experienced a lot of fun in the hard times and the good times. But and so you've experienced that they, you know, if you have a close friend, that they are trustworthy. But if for some reason you and the friend have some time apart and not talking to each other anymore or not as much, there's some tension in there. There's some, I thought we were close friends and you're not returning my calls or text messages. We're not spending time together. And so there's some distance. And that can be hard. But often, this is how we can experience our relationship with the Lord. You know, if you've heard people say that God is faithful, or maybe you've grown up in church hearing people talk about how God is faithful, maybe you've experienced that some, but maybe that was a while ago. Or maybe you haven't experienced it at all. And there, maybe there's just this, you might feel some distance with God. Maybe you've been crying out to the Lord. You've been asking Him to answer your prayer, to in some way do what you're asking, right? And sometimes we don't hear a response. We don't get a response. And so we start wondering, God, where are you? God, why don't you answer me? God, do you even care about me? We start getting more and more upset. And it doesn't feel like, sometimes it doesn't feel like God is faithful. If that's you today, I want to just encourage you that we're going to read through some parts of the Bible today that's going to help us see how God was seeming distant and seeming unfaithful to the people of Israel. But for years and years, these people, the people of God, the chosen people, the people that God had set apart, starting with Abraham, he said, I'm going to make you a great nation. I'm going to bless you and I'm going to multiply you. You're going to increase. And these people in Genesis, this family, he continued to give this blessing. And so then, when there was this famine, and at the risk of starvation, at the risk of losing the whole people, the Lord protected and provided salvation through Joseph in a crazy way, that he was sold into slavery, and then he came out. Miraculously, we see in Genesis, the last several chapters of Genesis, how God saved the people, his people. But unfortunately, a time had come between the end of Genesis and the start of Exodus. And this time had come where Joseph had so much favor in the land. And his family had come and they had received the best parts of the land. Goshen, a place where there's just really good, lots of water and lots of place for animals and crops. They had received all this blessing. But years and years later, there was this new king, this new Pharaoh of Egypt that didn't know anything about Joseph and what he did. And he was really worried. And this new Pharaoh, he was wondering, why are we giving the best parts of our land to these people that could take over us? To these people that could be a threat? And so he does something that is out of fear. He enslaves the people. And so I want to encourage you to open your Bibles here. We're going to be in Exodus chapter 1 and 2 today. And we're going to see how it seemed like God wasn't faithful to these people. But, spoiler alert, He's always faithful. Even if you don't see it, even if they didn't see it, God is faithful. So it says in Exodus 1, it says that in verse 11, we're going to start reading. It says, "So they put slave masters over them to oppress them with forced labor. And they built Pithom and Ramses as store cities for Pharaoh." They were doing the dirty work of Pharaoh. They were helping him instead of doing the opposite, what he wanted. He wanted them to fix their problems. And so in verse 12, he says, "But the more they were oppressed, the more they multiplied and spread. So the Egyptians came to dread over the Israelites and worked them ruthlessly. They made their lives bitter with harsh labor, in brick and mortar, with all kinds of work in the fields. And all the harsh labor, the Egyptians worked them ruthlessly." Multiple times we see that word, ruthlessly. I think that's for a reason. It was harsh. It was bitter. It was terrible. And you think, and so every time they're being more prosperous. Every time they become more of a threat to the king, and so the Pharaoh is getting them to have even harsher and harsher lives. They're working them with, I don't know, if you've been out in the hot sun working, and you're working all day, and people aren't thankful for what you're doing. It can be hard, but then it's not just that they're not thankful, it's that they're expecting you to do it. And it's not just that they're expecting you to do it, they're forcing you to do it. And maybe you've never been in that situation. Most likely you haven't been forced to do hard labor like this. But these people, they were in oppression. God's people were oppressed. In that point, they are oppressed. And so the people are oppressed. They're not just oppressed in slavery. But then we're going to see here they're oppressed even in this productivity. They've been having God's been blessing them with lots of children, being prosperous. And it said in verse 15 of Exodus 1, "So the king of Egypt said to the Hebrew midwives, whose names were Shipra and Puah, he said, 'When you were helping the Hebrew women during childbirth on the delivery stool, if you see a baby that is a boy, kill him. And if it's a girl, let her live.' The midwives, however, feared God." Can we say that? Feared God. They feared God. And they did not do what the king said. And they let the boys live. So these people, they're oppressed with all this hard labor. These people are then, not just with hard labor, now they're seeing their own babies be killed or in danger. And they're just, I wonder if they were starting to ask the people, didn't God promise to our family that we were going to be not just prosperous, but that we were going to be blessed and have land and all these blessings? But now we're enslaved, and now we're in bondage, we're all these problems. Where is God? Where is God? And God, do you care? Why are you silent? Now, it doesn't say that they were asking those questions or wondering those questions. I'm just kind of throwing that in there. I would think that that's something I would be asking. But maybe in your life there's someone that you're not in oppression, but you're in a spot in your life where someone is making your life bitter. They're making things hard for you. They want to succeed at making you feel miserable. And if you're in that situation or you've been in that situation, every day is a problem. Every day is a battle. And for why? You're like, "I'm not doing anything to you. Why are you so mad at me? Why are you so mean to me?" God's people become oppressed in different ways. But we're going to see that how God was working, even in this story, even when they were oppressed. Because in chapter 2, it's about the birth of Moses. And so in chapter 2, verse 5, it says, "Then Pharaoh's daughter went to the Nile to bathe, and her attendants were walking along with in the river by the river bank. And she saw a basket in the reeds." So Moses' mom had her baby boy, and she made a basket and put him out into the Nile River. And so here it says in verse 5, that she saw the basket among the reeds, and he sent her slave to get it. And when they opened it, and they saw a baby, and the baby was crying, and she felt sorry for him. Her dad wants him dead, but she felt sorry for this baby. And she said, "This one is one of the Hebrew babies." Then his sister, Moses' sister, asked Pharaoh's daughter, "Shall I go and get one of the Hebrew women to nurse the baby for you?" "Yes," she said. So the girl went and got the baby's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, "Take this baby and nurse her for me, and I will pay you." So the woman took the baby and nursed him. Verse 10, when the child grew older, she took him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses because she drew him out of the water. That word Moses in Hebrew sounds like drawn out. And so God provided salvation for this one little boy, this baby, saved him. But he didn't just save his life. He gave it so that he could be with his family for some time. His mother still got to be with him and nurse him. And then he grew up in the palace of the Pharaoh. He grew up in the palace. He was a prince of Egypt. Not just saved his life, but he grew up as a prince. And so he learned all the things that princes would learn. He became wise. He knew all kinds of things that they taught him. But it says in verse 11, "One day, after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were. And he watched them at their hard labor." Now I just want to wonder here, like, how often was he doing this? How often was he wondering watching his people, watching what they were doing? Was he waiting for his time, or was he just starting to feel like, oh, I'm part of these people? And so it says he watched them in their hard labor. And he saw an Egyptian beating the Hebrew, one of his own people, Moses looking this way and that way, seeing no one. He killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. The next day he went out and he saw two Hebrews fighting, and he asked one of them in the wrong, "Why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew?" And the man said, "Who made you ruler and judge over us? Are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian?" Then Moses was afraid and thought, "What I did has become known." And when Pharaoh heard of this, he tried to kill Moses, but Moses fled from Pharaoh, and he went to live in Midian, where he sat down by a well. Moses took matters into his own hands. Moses, his life had been saved. The midwives had been saving lives, and now Moses tried to take things into his own hands. Even as God was preparing him for leadership, Moses still wanted to do things his way. Maybe he didn't know about God yet. Maybe he's not had this encounter that we're going to find out in chapter 3. But the midwives are preserving life. Even Pharaoh's daughter preserved his life. But Moses, in his zeal, in his passion, in his own doing, took a life. And what we see here is that God's presence is evident. Now, maybe not to the people, actually, not to the people. The people there, they were wondering, where is God? I mean, I assume they were wondering, where is God? Where are you? Are you going to help us? But God, through all these circumstances, is preparing this leader and having the midwives fear him and save lives. So God's presence was evident. And it's a lot easier to see God's presence after you've stepped out of a situation, after you've seen God rescue, after you've seen God come through and you realize that God is faithful. But often you look back and say, wow, God was present through the whole time of that. And maybe he wasn't answering my prayer because it was not the right timing, or I don't know what it was, but he was present. And it was evident through that time. I know there's different things that we do in our life and where we're wondering, where is God? And when we get through that, we can see sometimes that God was right there. And so God was preparing to rescue the people of Israel. He was preparing them so they would be saved from slavery, from this oppression. He wanted them to be his own people, a nation. He wanted them to be the people that would bless all people on earth. But he first had to show them who he was. And he first had to rescue them from the Egyptians. It says this near the end of chapter 2. In verse 23, it says, during that long period. So we find out that Moses here had started a family in Midian, gotten married and had kids, and it's been 40 years. And so it says in verse 23, during that long period, the king of Egypt died. And the Israelites groaned in their slavery. And they cried out. And their cry for help because of their slavery went up to God. And God heard their groaning, and he remembered his covenant. His covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. Now, it's interesting in these verses here that this is finally like the first times that it says in the text that the people are crying out. They were finally starting to ask God. They were groaning. Help us. God, where are you? Help us. Sometimes we don't cry out to the Lord until we're all the way broken, until we desperately need him. But he wants us to cry out to him, not just in the hard times. He wants us to be crying out to him all the time. He wants us to trust him. He wants us to know that he is faithful and experience his faithfulness. But here's interesting that it says in verse 24 that God heard their groaning and he remembered his covenant. This, you might think, well, does God forget? Because now he's remembering. Well, it's this idea, this word here, remembering, is kind of more the idea of he began to act. He started to put into motion what was going to happen with saving the people. And so God didn't forget his covenant, but he remembered. He started to act on this covenant that he had with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. And these covenants that they had set up with them in Genesis 35 is one of the places where he has the covenant. And in Genesis 35, verse 11, God said to him, this is to Jacob, he said, I am the God Almighty. Be fruitful and increase in number. A nation and a community of nations will come from you. And the kings will be among your descendants. The land I gave to Abraham and Isaac, I also give to you. And I give you this land to your descendants after. And so this God is saying here, I'm giving you this land. I'm giving you land. There's the covenant I made with Abraham and Isaac. I'm also making the same covenant with you. I'm going to bless you. I'm going to make you fruitful. And so, now the Israelites are starting to finally cry out to God, and God is hearing them. He's hearing their groanings. He's remembering the covenant, starting to act on this covenant. And we see here that God, when he promises something, he's faithful. And so God's promise continues. It continues for hundreds of years here, in this case, in Egypt, in Exodus 1 and 2. It was hundreds of years later. It says that they were slaves for 400 years. Seems like God forgot. But he didn't. His timing is so different than our timing. A few days, a few weeks, a few months, years, they can be a lot for us, especially when we haven't heard from God, when we are crying out. But God is faithful. And God's promise continues. His promise continued for them. God's promises continue for us. Now, they didn't see his faithfulness during the trials, but they found out later the evidence that God's presence was with them. So maybe you're thinking, well, that was great for them. That was a long time ago. That was then, and that was them. Like, that's great for them and then, but what about now? And what about us? Is God faithful to me? To us? Is he faithful now? Has God forgotten his promises? We can ask, where are you, God? Why don't you answer my prayer? It's been weeks and I've heard nothing. God, do you care about me and my situation? God, do you remember your promises? In 1978, there was this science teacher in New York, and he told his students, he passed out a list of all the solar eclipses coming up. And he told them that in 2024, they're going to watch the total solar eclipse together. And that was 1978. And he remembered, a few weeks ago, he got together a Facebook event, and he invited his former students to come watch the eclipse with him this past Monday. And so he invited these people. He invited these former high school students. And he was amazed because this Monday, 46 years later, over 100 students came and watched the eclipse with him. I think I have a picture of that. It was a news on NBC News that they picked it up, talking about this story, how he was there inviting them. Or he was there with them after he had invited them. And I'm sure they were thinking, have you forgot? And I wonder when they saw this Facebook invitation, I wonder, they're thinking, wait, you remembered after all these years? You remember that you were going to watch the eclipse with us? So they got to do that together. I'm sure it was so surprising after 46 years. And 46 years seems like a lifetime or half a lifetime for us. And how would you remember that? But 46 years is not very much to God. In fact, the time is just so different. How we think of time and how God thinks of time, because we are linear, and God is above time. Sometimes I wonder, God, are you going to remember your promises? Maybe you're wondering that. What about me? But our faithful God is working even when we don't see it. And that's our takeaway today, main idea. Our faithful God is working. He's faithful. He's working behind the scenes. Even when we don't see what he's doing, he's faithful and he's working. It reminds me of the song, "Even when I don't see it, you're working. Even when I don't feel it, you're working. You never stop, you never stop working. You never stop working. Waymaker, miracle worker, promise keeper, light in the darkness. My God, that is who you are." God is faithful. God is the miracle worker. He's the waymaker. He's the promise keeper. He is the light in the darkness. And even if we don't see him working and we don't feel him working, he never stops working. And we need to know that. But then we need to trust him. So I wonder, how are you feeling? Are you seeing God at work? Maybe you're not. And if you aren't, are you crying out to the Lord? If you're crying out to the Lord, tell him what's on your mind. God is faithful. Even when we don't see his faithfulness, later we look back and we say, wow, God really was doing something there. There's another song that is really popular right now on the radio by Toby Mac. And it says, "But when my world broke into pieces, you were there faithfully. When I cried out to you, Jesus, you made a way for me. I may never be the same man, but I'm a man who still believes. When I cried out to you, Jesus, you were there faithfully." Jesus wants us to cry out to him. Jesus wants us to go to him with our burdens. It doesn't mean he's going to answer everything the way we want him to. But he's there, and he's faithful. And I wonder, as you've thought about this, how God is faithful, I wonder if there's times in your life that you've thought about how God is faithful. He's come through, but then later you just start kind of forgetting. I do that often. I realize that God has been faithful. He's been evident. His presence is evident. His promise is continuing, but I kind of forget. So I just want you to just take a moment just to think about, how has God been faithful in your life? How has he been faithful in your life? It doesn't have to be this year. It doesn't have to be right really recently, but how has he been faithful? And then this week, I want you just to think about how you're going to remind yourself how God has been faithful. And even remind others. It's great to talk about how God was faithful. The Israelites, they would set up stones to remember God's faithfulness when they crossed over the Jordan River. They set up stones so people would remember, what is this all about? And they'd be able to talk about how God had been faithful to them. So how are we talking about God's faithfulness? Because often, we just start forgetting. And then when we forget, and we're in the next trial, or in the next problem, we start wondering, God, where are you? God, do you remember me? God, do you care about me? And the answer is, he does. He cares about each of us. He cares about us so much that it wasn't just that he sent Moses to deliver the people. He made a way for his own son, Jesus Christ, to come into the world and to die for us. To die so that we can live. To die, to take on our burdens, to take on our, not just burdens, but our sin, and pay the price that needed to be paid for our sin. And so Jesus died in our place. And God made this way for us. God was faithful. God is faithful, and God will always be faithful. Let's pray. God, we thank you that you are a faithful God, and even when we don't always see what you're doing, you'll never stop working, and you keep on working. You keep on doing what you have planned. You keep on doing what's good. You keep your promises. God, we thank you that even when we are in the midst of trials or in the midst of doubts, that we can come to you and you can hear us. And we can give that to you, Lord. I pray that we would cry out to you when we're in those trials, when we're in the pain, when we're in even in the just little bad things happening, little things in our life, that we would cry out to you, Lord. Thank you that you are the faithful God. Thank you that you're working and that you have a plan. Help us to trust in you. In Jesus' name.